Hey guys, we're the Hard Time Strongman podcast, training up a bear class of man. And today we are, I guess, making up for like 2 years of having missed this class. I don't know why we haven't talked about this before, but we're talking about battle drills. Specifically, battle drills 1 through 3. Our references for today, ATP 3-21.8, the Infantry Platoon Squad, and TC 3-21.76, the good old Ranger Handbook.
I'm not going to lie, man. Practicing these battle drills was probably one of the most fun things I ever did at basic training.
I was going to say, like, I remember specifically one day, like, and granted, I went in the worst time ever because I was dying in that Georgia heat. But
you're an idiot.
Like, I just remember, I know, it's no forward thinking, weird for a 20-year-old.
Right.
But I, you know, we were doing something out in the, on the PT yard. I think it was just bounding just over and over, like, so long. And, like, we were all just, like, hating life. I looked over at one dude. I'm like, dude, we're getting paid for this. And then he, like, perked up. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Like, oh, that's pretty cool. All right. Yep. But, yeah,
battle drills. To be fair, you were getting paid to do a lot of stupid.
I got paid to do a lot of stuff. Yeah. And a lot of stuff that wasn't in my, like, don't get me wrong, I never read the job description if they ever gave it to me, but I don't think it was in there.
A lot of this stuff sure wasn't.
I was going to say, like, I don't remember, you know, anything about, you know, like picking up trash or mopping floors or any hoozle. That's my own problem. That's, you know, past me's problem. Built up the traumas of today, you know, lay a good foundation. Anyway, battle drills. We are, you know, as we talked in earlier episodes, we are, you know, doubling down on our foundation of building up these warrior tasks and drills, you know, firming out this guerrilla mindset, get you capable in, you know, everything. So one of the things that we failed to do in the past is talk about battle drills. Literally the one thing you're expected to know how to do. You shouldn't have to think about it. It should be automatic.
No. Yeah.
This is cause and effect. We talked about, so in the past, we talked about situational awareness. You know, you get certain cues and certain, you know, reactions take place, right? Same exact idea. So if you get a certain, you know, visual or, you know, some sort of cue, then an action takes place. You shouldn't have to think about it. That way everybody's on the same page moving quickly. You don't have to waste time on, you know, figuring all this stuff out. That's all battle drill is. But battle drills 1 through 3, we're talking about battle drill 1, react to contact. Battle drill 2 and 2 alpha, we're going to condense this into just attack. This is, you know, specifically platoon or squad attack. We're condensing into attack because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter. It's the same thing. It just depends on how many people you have, you know, what kind of unit structure you have. And then battle drill 3, break contact.
I will say this, though. I remember these battle drill numbers being very different when we were in.
They were very different.
Yeah.
Isn't that just great? So all the books that we have, everything is now out of date. How wonderful.
Correct.
When we were going in, it was battle drill 1, battle drill 1 alpha, then 2, then 3. So platoon attack, squad attack, react to contact, and break contact. But admittedly, this makes more sense because
it does.
As battle drill 1, react to contact, this is, you know, what's going to, you know, this is what everything that's going to build off of this anyways. You know, this is your, you know, your initial reaction before you, you know, build off your decision making and, you know, on and up. But I don't know, man. You got anything else before we go into it?
No. This is all common sense. It's kind of fun reading back through this because, you know, I'm having flashbacks to get smoked and B, actually learning these.
I was gonna say, like, when I was making these show notes, like, I half had the Ranger Handbook pulled up and half I was just going off of memory from my green book I made. I was just this stuff just sticks with me, man. I say this a lot about a lot of soldiering stuff. This is the one thing you're expected to know how to do. You know, like, if you're not doing this, then I can't help you.
You're wrong. Yep.
You're so wrong. So Baljo 1, react to contact. So situation for this, the force, you are getting directly engaged by the enemy. So pew pew, you're taking fire. Very first thing you do, period, is immediately return fire. You're going for, you know, absolute supremacy, you know, overwhelming and accurate fire. You are seeking cover, so the closest cover and concealed position you can get to, if that's laying down as flat as you can, then, you know, so be it. But you're going for cover and concealment, and you're shouting out the three Ds, which is distance, direction, and description of the enemy. So we'd get this nailed into us all day too.
My God.
That's a squad size element, 200 meters north in the open, you know, and you know these things. So I said them in that order. This is all happening as closely as they can be.
Contact front 200 meters, you know,
machine gun, you know, whatever,
three-man element, LMG and small arms,
right? So this is for many reasons, obviously, so you and your buddies know what you're looking at, because if you have one guy looking left, one guy looking right, one guy looking center, then, you know, you might not all have the same picture. So everyone knows what to look at. And then in the typical, you know, army structure, unit structure, that information will be passed up to, you know, verbally through leadership quickly so that they can get that up to higher. So after all this takes place, you are suppressing the enemy. So talking about interconnecting or interlocking sectors of fire, you're talking guns with your buddy, all that stuff. So interlocking sectors of fire, typically think of, so your front 4 or 5 degree on either side, and that is your responsibility, unless if your leader, whoever's in charge of you, gives you different sectors of fire, your left and rights, like we call them.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all those, so yeah, multiple people, all those are interconnecting, so they cross. So say if you or me were online and my farthest left is, you know, a building, your farthest right is going to be that same building. So everybody's doubling up, everything's covered. And talking guns, the whole point of you suppressing fire is to have it be continuous and overwhelming, right? So you don't want to have a lull in the shooting while the both of you are reloading. So
right.
One guy shoots, another guy shoots, or one guy shoots until he has to reload, then the other guy picks up, just going for that continuous. You're trying to keep everybody's heads down. You're trying to get good shots on target.
Good way of talking about that is just alternating fire.
Yes.
You fire a shot or two, the next person fires a shot or two, then you fire a shot or two. It, repeat, repeat, repeat until one of you runs out of ammo, and then the other person fills in for your lack of fire at the time with more fire. Until they have to reload, and then yeah.
So much fire. All the fire.
I call it peace through superior firepower.
Yeah, it's peaceful on my side if you're not shooting at me.
It's great if I'm not getting shot at. It's going to suck
all I really care about. Well, you know what? He deserves it.
Mm-hmm.
He shot me first.
Yeah.
At this time, your leader is going to decide whether we're going to attack, bypass, or break contact based off of the location of the enemy and different obstacles, the size of the enemy element and their capabilities, vulnerable flanks, and positions of cover and concealment, you know, along those routes to the flanks. Because you have to think, when you're engaging this enemy, is it a fight you can win? So if you are a team size element or a squad size element and you roll up on a Dishka or K, or
you are, you breaking know, contact
RPG team or anything like that, or bye, not worth it. Army doctrine is 3-1. Now, as not typical army used with typical army doctrine, you know, that can flex, but your engagements are going to look a lot different. But the whole gist of this is that leader's going to decide if it's worth it or not to continue that fight.
really comes down to having good judgment in that case. Like, yeah. Can you, as a team of three, take on a team of 12? I mean, maybe. Maybe, if you can get a guy or two on their flank. Yeah.
I mean, I don't like those odds at all. Honestly,
I don't either.
I'm not fighting to completely destroy that element anyways. Unless I'm in like uber bad straits and something needs to happen.
I mean, I'd rather leave behind a claymore to try to lure him in.
By rat trap, I mean shooting somebody in the stomach or the groin and lay him bleed out while their buddies take care of him. But any whistle.
Yeah, that works too. Or just launching, you know, a 320 into their into their pack.
What a beautiful machine. So Lear decides, based off of, you know, all the information he has available and, you know, looking forward to what he believes to be possible, whether or not we can make the fight or if we gotta leave. That is react to contact, your initial reaction. And real quick, guys, let's hear from our sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Blackbeard Firestarter. Blackbeard Firestarter has been our first choice in Firestarter since they introduced their Firestarter rope years ago.
Blackbeard offers their fire starters, their fire plugs, arc lighters, ferro rods, stormproof matches, everything you need to get a fire started.
Their products are made right here in the U.S., wind and waterproof, have an insane burn time. They're basically dummy proof.
And to help you out, Blackbeard let us cherry pick from their store everything that we want, everything that we thought you needed to get a fire started, and we call it our Hard Time Strongmen Fire Kit. On top of that, they're also offering a 15% discount on anything in their store when you enter code STRONGMEN at checkout.
We can't recommend Blackbeard enough. They stand behind their products, and so do we.
Be sure to check them out at blackbeardfire.com and on Instagram at blackbeardfire. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. And now a word from our newest sponsor, Granite Rifle Group. Granite Rifle Group is a precision rifle company owned and operated by a USMC veteran. You've probably heard him on our show.
Granite offers turnkey rifle solutions built around your field use, with plug-and-play upgrades available to tailor your rifle for your specific needs. GRG offers simple rifle kits or complete custom builds available to suit every need, from the weekend target shooter or hunter to the long-range precision rifleman.
Granite Rifle Group is all about putting high-quality precision rifles into the hands of Americans to extend the reach of the American rifleman. And when you use the code STRONGMEN at checkout, you'll get 6.9% off your order. Nice.
Nice. Check them out at graniterifelegroup.com or find them on Instagram at granite_rifle_group_LLC. And as always, stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight. So that brings us to Battle Drill 2 and 2 Alpha. So 2 is just the platoon size. 2 Alpha is your squad attack. And I'm not going to go into the rant of you need a Bravo. So yeah, 2/2 Alpha. We're going to call it attack. So this is, you are either initiating contact or you are reacting to contact. So if you're initiating, your leader is going to place your force with interconnecting sectors of fire, like we talked about. And they only initiate once both suppression and assault elements are prepped. So this is going to be your closest position of cover and concealment. And when we're talking about suppression and assault elements, yes, this takes discipline. When we're talking about this, you're going to be dividing your element into two teams. One is going to be your suppression, or cover by fire, and the other is going to be your assault element, which is going to be the element that pulls back and circles around to the flank in cover and concealment, so that you can henceforth close with and destroy the enemy.
There's a lot of considerations with this. So
yes,
in a, you know, in a doctrinal line unit and line squad, right? So you have different weapon systems, you have your saws, you know, your 2/4 teams, all that stuff. This is going to depend on what you have available, but your support by fire, your suppression element, is going to be burning through ammo.
Oh yeah.
Because as soon as you initiate contact or you are reacting to contact, that element's not moving. Like, you guys are, you know, like we said, we're reacting, we're, you know, getting that fire superiority, we're getting online, we're doing the 3Ds, all the stuff. But then they're stuck, essentially, until we decide that we're bounding, you know, we're breaking contact or we're assaulting through. So keep that in mind with whatever weapon systems that you have. You know, and a lot of time, you know, you can't choose, you know, who's going to, you know, meet the contact first. But the whole time that you are using that maneuver element, that assault element, the whole time they're moving and getting online, they're still shooting.
Oh yeah.
You know, this the thing called machine gun math, right? You know, whatever, you know, whatever weapon system you're using times, you know, whatever whatever rate of fire equals how much time you have. So yeah, keep that in mind. Yeah, that's why we say that when we're equation. Right. So that's why we're saying when we're initiating contact, you better be darn good and ready. Because if you don't have everything, you know, buttoned up, then you know, that's on you.
And that assault element better be hauling butt to get where they need to be. And that may be 100 meters. That may be 500 meters. You don't know. Yeah. Like, so you just got to get around them.
Right. So, and we'll get into the nitty-gritty when we talk about the reacting. But when we talk about, like you said, the suppressing and the assaulting element, the assaulting element, when they move, so they're behind the suppressing element. So they're moving in the best cover concealed route to the flank of the enemy because they obviously don't want to be observed, right? Right. And then they're getting online and they're getting established in their sectors of fire and everything. Once that's all set up, then whoever is in charge of them, their leader, signals to the leader of the suppression element and, you know, we get the party started.
Oh, yeah.
But
shifting of fire. Suppression of fire as they assault through. Yeah, it's fun. I love that one. Yeah, why not?
All right. So if reacting to contact, right? So the element that initially took contact, the team that took contact, your suppressing element, right? Gains and maintains accurate suppressive fire. So those interlocking such as fire, talking guns, and we're trying to get superior violence. The force that is not actively engaged, your assault element, starts to move. So they break off from that suppressive element and they maneuver to the enemy flank in that best covered and concealed route. At that point, they get in place to the closest covered and concealed position to the enemy. Once that is set, that leader will call for a shift and lift fire. So shifting fire, imagine an L shape, right? So the suppressing element is shooting at the kill zone. When assaults are ready to move, they start moving, they shift fire. So you shift fire left, shift fire right, you know, whatever is the opposite, you know, direction of your guys, because you don't want to, you know, fraggle people.
Right.
And once you call shift fire, assault needs to be moving. Because they're no longer being suppressed in that area where they're moving now. So assault needs to be getting after it. Like you said, with violence of action, quickly shooting the whole time, and they are assaulting through the objective.
Yeah, this is where the saying speed, surprise, and violence of action comes into play. Because the enemy, hopefully, doesn't know that element is there. And once that kicks off, they need to be hauling. And they need to be shooting and destroying everything in their path. If it is alive, if it is breathing, if it is near a weapon, it can be shot until you walk by it. Unless you're not in the actual military, in which case you can double back and shoot them in the head. Just saying.
Are we?
Yep.
So, assault element, assaults through. So, I love this because there's three layers. I know. Because there's three layers of death.
Oh, great.
Right, there's three layers of death, whether you're initiating or reacting, right? Your suppression element is shooting that entire time. And you're not just shooting just to shoot to keep people's heads down. Like, you're actively trying, you're actively engaged, trying to find people to shoot, right? You're not just shooting for fun. So while all that's happening, you're moving your assault element. They guess up and they're like, oh, is it my turn? Like, okay, let's go. And they're running, shooting, engaging people, right? So shift, it should be a fluid motion all the way through. So your assaulting element has assaulted through that kill zone where your supporting element was just shooting at, right? anybody that's on the ground alive, bam, you're dead. Continue on all the way through until you get to your LOA, your limit of advance. All right, that's predetermined by your leadership. They'll call it out. Everyone will call it out. Everybody gets online. They pull security outwards. Guardia gets like counterattack, all that stuff. Once the suppression element hears LOA, they assault through. So first layer of death, second layer of death, third layer of death, all the way through. Once they get through to their LOA, the farthest, in the kill zone, in the kill box, everything in there should be dead or destroyed.
Yeah.
That's the whole point of it, right?
Yeah, there should be no one left alive.
No one at all. If there is, then you failed. You did a terrible job, and you should be honestly kind of ashamed because you had three chances. At that point, once everybody calls LOA, your individuals and team leaders, do all their lace checks, lace reports, meaning liquid ammo, casualty, equipment. So you're checking guys, fluids. How are they on ammo? Famous casualty. Make sure everybody has their equipment. You're doing your EPW searches. This is where your EPW teams, your search teams, come into place. If someone is left alive, which they shouldn't
be. It's a big if. They shouldn't be.
And then, of course, looking for intel, equipment, stuff that you can scavenge, or if you have yours to destroy everything that you find, you destroy, throw in a big old pile, throw some thermite on it, call it a day. At that point, you consolidate. Everybody gets the up, and you continue on mission quickly to avoid any, IDF or, counterattack by the enemy.
That's what we call getting off the X.
Yes. That's why we're saying so, quickly, right? That's why we're saying all this stuff should be automatic. You're not having to deliberate on this stuff. You're going in, getting it done. It should be second nature because you have to move quickly. Because if I'm the enemy and I know that one of my squads or platoons just got murked, then I already know where they are on a map. Yep. And if I know the enemy's still there, I'm gonna delete that grid square.
Yes.
Because screw you. So that's why we need to, giddy up and get along out of there.
And that is why we do not take prisoners. Make sure everything's dead. That way you do not get slowed down by EPWs.
It had to be a very, very valuable EPW.
Yeah.
And at that point, if I'm looking for HVTs, then I'm looking for HVTs. I'm not performing an attack or assault.
No.
So.
Yeah, exactly. And I, to be honest, I can't stress this enough, what this actually looks like. You have, more than likely, if you have an element big enough, you are walking in wedges. You're walking in wedges, and the front wedge gets engaged. They get online. The other one moves around, gets online. So you have an L.
Well, for the space, right? So you're talking about wedges, right?
Space.
What's the distance between dudes in a wedge?
Quite large. 10 meters, 25 meters? I can't remember.
Yeah, 10 to 15, right? 5 to 15, depending on your environment. So this is big.
Yeah.
This is a big area, guys. Mm-hmm. That's why it's also important. So just for your command and control, you have to be able to see and hear everybody. Right,
because the range between people,
your buddies pick a move and you don't. Grenade. Yeah, so 5 to 10 meters, right? But if your little private on the end of the wedge doesn't hear you and you pick up and leave without him, that's an issue, right?
Yeah.
So, any whistle? Yeah. So it covers quite a bit of space, whatever your box is.
But anyway, when this assault element pushes through, it is literally just a wall of death. It is just a straight wall of death, just fluidly moving straight across until it gets to the other end. And then, holy crap, here comes the next wall of death straight through. Like, this is why we say there should be nothing left alive.
Yeah, because, I mean, the whole time that's all elements moving, people are shooting. The whole time. Death is happening the whole time. And then if you're going through while they're still pinned down, because this is a fluid motion, right? And then they're like, oh, holy crap, you were over there and you're shooting the whole time and you walk all the way through. And then the sword fire goes back over again. Yeah, everything should be dead.
And it's a beautiful machine. Critically about that, the gunfight is not quiet. Unless, even if you're running suppressors, it is not quiet. Not going to be heard for a long, long way. Even if nobody radioed that they were being attacked. That gunfire can be heard from a long way. That's why we say, get the hell off the X. Get out of there. Because everybody in that zip code knows you're there.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, reinforcements, counterattack, you know, indirect fire, gas, all that stuff could be knocking. So, yep. Not great.
Nope. So let's hit break contact. It's Battle Jewel 3, guys.
For break contact.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, man, 90% of the time in the army, if you got engaged, it's probably going to be a break contact moment because you don't know how large of an element you're facing. And
well, I say that
seemed to be.
I say that in jest, right? So doctrinally, yeah, in the army, if you don't have a 3-to-1, you're breaking contact. That's just per doctrine, right? Mm-hmm. That's drilled into every leader. If there is a, you know, confirmed marksman or sniper, suspected sniper, you're breaking contact.
Oh yeah, you're gone.
Okay. If you show up,
you're gone.
Yeah, I was gonna say, if you show up and, you know, like your little squad and you roll up on a dish, you're gone. Bye. You know, it's not worth it because you have to think of what the capabilities of the enemy versus the capabilities you are. And if it's not worth it, it's not worth it. And you're breaking contact.
Yeah. Better to break contact and annotate where that those coordinates were and call in an airstrike on it in that case.
Yeah, absolutely. Or I was gonna say in like the guerrilla context, I mean, that's all you're going to be doing is getting some good fire on, you know, get your casualties that you need to then break contact. Because that's the whole point. Right. I.e. read, fry the brain, and read War of the Flea. Break contact. So when you don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah. It's time to just GTFO. You know, this is not where you want to be. So it is time to get the
fuck out of there. These are not the right vibes, and I'm not about it.
Yeah. Your force is being directly engaged by the enemy. Whoever's in charge, a leader determines the enemy is a superior force and decides to break contact. They call out, quite literally, break contact. So, what happens?
Force breaks contact with the enemy by using fire and maneuver, i.e., bounding. Force continues to move until it cannot be effectively observed or fired upon by the enemy. So, bounding. The leader designates the suppressing element, the base of fire. The leader then orders the remaining element, the remaining team, to move to a specified distance, direction, terrain feature, rally point, you know, whatever, in a bounding fashion. So, meaning you're going to, you know, in a direction to the next position of cover and concealment, which is your overwatch position. So this whole time, the suppressing element is suppressing the enemy. So no one moves unless if someone's shooting. Yep. Is the whole gist of bounding. Cover me while I move. Move, I've got you covered. Just etched into my brain. But the bounding team uses smoke, terrain features, you know, whatever, to, you know, relatively safely get to their overwatch position. Once there, they set up and they start suppressing the enemy. Mm-hmm. Now, this is why we're saying that this stuff is automatic. You don't have to talk about this stuff. Once you hear that that bounding team has started shooting, then the suppressing element starts moving. And we're going to stair step that, shoot, move, until you are out of range, until you can't see the enemy, until they can't shoot at you, and then you reevaluate.
Yep.
Now, as far as bounding goes, we're talking about two different methods of bounding. So successive bounding is bounding where one team moves to an area of cover and concealment. Once they get set up and start suppressing, then the second team moves to a similar position, generally online with the first team. So we're kind of doing like half steps out. And then alternating bounding. Oh, go for it.
I was going to say. And then your other method is going to be your alternating bounding. So one team moves an area of cover and concealment. And then they start firing. Second team moves to a similar position, but it's past. So it's staggered. You're moving past where they are. So it's stared. It's like you're walking down the street. You know, each step is further than the other one, but it's the same distance. It's the same principle here, except whenever you're set, you're shooting. So.
Right. And this is generally a faster way of bounding, get more distance covered. But this, this sucks. Oh, it sucks so bad.
It's terrible.
You are bounding is laborious, and alternating bounding, you are running so far.
Yeah. Successive is a lot better for. Successive gives you a lot more protection, in my opinion, and it saves your stamina. Not necessarily your ammo, but it saves the other stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say successive. I feel like you have more rounds than Ari because that second or two while everyone's like hearing everybody else shooting, you have both elements shooting at the same time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, one sucks for ammo, one sucks for just your cardio. But that's a you problem.
That is a you problem.
And that was Baljuls 1-3, guys. You know, react to contact, attack, and break contact. Super basic stuff, but you know, like we said, this is stuff that everybody needs to know how to do, and they shouldn't have to think about it. This should be automatic. This should be immediate reaction. So
muscle memory.
This is, you know, your warrior tasks and drills, right? The stuff that, you know, the bare bones stuff that you're expected to do. So going into next episode, we'll cover 4-6 and we'll get after it. But until next time, guys, we are the Hard Time Strongman Podcast. Cheering up a better class of man. Patrons, make sure to stick around for the post show. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight with superior firepower.